Well, there's nothing like the North Woods of Wisconsin. We have this beautiful landscape, and I love the Four Seasons. And certainly I love fishing there. I love the people there. Unique place to visit or live. And in the Loon Lake Fishing Mystery Series, these northern woods can be dangerous places and for more reasons than one. And author Victoria Houston writes about that. She fishes and writes in those northern woods, and she's created a cast of characters that I certainly have come to think about as almost as neighbors. Maybe you have, too. Her latest book is called Dead Rapunzel, and I hope you'll join in with your questions or comments, or maybe comments about her whole series of books. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Miller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. If you read any of Victoria's books, what'd you enjoy about them? Again, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Victoria.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. It's so good to hear your voice again.
Well, thank you, Larry. Nice to hear from you.
Here we are. What is this, number 15?
Yes. Who would have thought?
Oh, my goodness me. And it's so much fun. You know what, for me, this is one of the things that I really enjoy about your series of books. Because here we've got Llewellyn Ferris, the sheriff. We've got Doc Osborne, her kind of love interest, but
retired dentist. Since you're sponsored by the Dental Associates, I think it's important to point that out.
and he serves sometimes as the coroner.
Yes.
And what's the name of the guy who's usually indisposed?
Pecor,
that's right. it's just cool.
Yep, he's usually a little overserved and recovering, which is fine with Doc Osborne.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And Ray Pratt, of course. So those three, Ray Pratt.
Yes.
Who runs around with a fish on top of his head.
Yep, stuffed fish on his hat. And I actually have had a close relative who wore a hat like that. Fortunately, many years ago. Otherwise, I think we'd be committing him. But
oh my goodness me! So you really did have, and was he at all like Ray otherwise?
Well, you know, people always ask me. In fact, the funny thing is, I've had women come up to me and say, "You know that character Ray Pratt? I'd like a name and phone number because I'll support him." But what I tell people, and this is true for all three of the characters, which they're really distilled from memories from growing up here in the North Woods. I grew up in Rhinelander, and I have a brother who actually years ago was a fishing guide. He ran a bait shop, and when he was low on money, he dug graves and at the Catholic cemetery. And to this day, Larry, he still tells the most tasteless jokes. But I also have two cousins from Stevens Point. And so all three of them, really bad actors in their, late teens, early 20s. And so that character is really distilled from my memories of those guys. And I cannot tell you how many people will say to me, "Oh, I've got a neighbor just like that," or "All those guys up there are like that." If they were all like that, we'd be in big trouble. But yeah, a lot of fun.
But it is a lot of fun. And the characters do remind me, I've spent a lot of time musky fishing in particular up there in your neck of the woods.
Oh, sure.
A lot of the people I know up there are kind of like those characters.
Well, that old saying, some of the stuff you cannot make up.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, I've interviewed you many times, but I'm sure there are people listening today who haven't known about you or heard other interviews. So I'm going to ask you once more.
Sure.
You wrote you wanted to get out of the North.
oh, when I was, you know, growing up here, teenager, coming out of high school, I couldn't wait to get out of town. And I remember thinking, this is the most boring place. You know, it's very colorless. who would ever want to live here? And, of course, that was 20 years ago. I went through some major kind of life changes, decided to change my career, decided to change my husband. And I thought, well, I'll come back for a short visit, and then I'll go, you know, get a public relations job in Chicago or Minneapolis. But that was 20 years ago. And when I got back here, and I, in fairness, I have to say, once I left Wisconsin and went to school out east, I just was drawn back every summer. So I, as my kids were growing up, we all, we're one of the few families that didn't go to Disneyland because I wanted to come up north and just sort of reconnect with the water and my family. And it's just, it's gorgeous country. And I did have one very interesting experience relative to this area, which was my daughter was living and working in Japan, and I went to Japan, and we traveled around the countryside together. And everywhere you went, yes, there were beautiful gardens, but otherwise it was all bamboo. Bamboo,
yeah.
Very tall bamboo trees. And so when I came back to northern Wisconsin, I looked around, and I, for the first time, I could really see the wonderful variety of evergreens and hardwoods that we have here. It's just, you know, it's just breathtaking. But sometimes, as they say, you have to go away to find out what you're missing.
Well, that's for sure. And your titles of your book, let's cover that again, too, because you've got Dad plus the name of a fishing lure.
Well, it all started because the first title, the first book in the series, when I turned it in, I titled it Dead Creek. That was my title. Now I have a New York publisher. And the second book I turned in, I had a title on it that they decided, the marketing team, to change to Dead Angler. Well, then the third book goes in, and now they change it to Dead Water. And I'm really getting worried because
running out of
synonyms for water. These people work in high rises. I'm thinking they're just, next one, if I'm not careful, is going to be Dead Duck. So I decided to take control. And so ever since then, since I know that the stories are always going to be set up here with the background of fishing, whether it's fly fishing or muskie and walleye, you know, bait fishing, I just decided to go with either trout flies or fishing lures in the title. Of course, I'm happy with dead. I mean, that's a big signal.
Yeah.
That doesn't bother me. And the funny thing about it is, as a writer, I really need the title before I start the book. I think that's interesting because the title isn't the, you know, it's not a clue or anything, but
no.
I just need that in order to get started. So a Rapunzel, for the record, is a trout fly. It's what we call it's a dry fly in the category of trout flies that sort of resemble dragonflies and damselflies. It's one of those.
And it turns up, I'm thinking now, it's probably around halfway through the book?
Yeah, it turns up as part of a collection of beautiful trout flies.
So the lure always, at some point, the lure always gets a mention in the book. Although
it does,
It may not have anything to do with what's going on.
Yeah, if you're trying to tie it to the murderer, you're going to have to work really hard.
I don't think that's gonna happen. Well, you know, it's funny. I was just talking with Patricia Skulka, and I don't know if you know her.
I don't know her, but I was listening to some of your interviews. Sounded very interesting.
Yeah, and she and her book, your books are alike in one way, kind of in that a coroner plays a big role. Of course, you've got Doc Osborne isn't really a coroner, but he gets to serve when.
Right.
Picor is incapacitated, And I was thinking at the time, well, it's they're in their own ways they're very similar.
Well, Doc Osborne, I don't know anything about her character,
right.
But I will say Doc Osborne, as a retired dentist, is very interested in dental forensics.
Yeah,
and that continues to be in real life a very interesting field for people, because they call that field odontology, and it continues to be the best way to identify dead bodies, even if they've been, you know, badly burned. Usually they can still work with teeth. Your teeth are just, you know, they are not, it's tough to destroy a tooth. Let's put it that way.
You know what? We're going to have to, we'll sink our teeth into this a bit more. I need to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on The Ideas Now, and then we'll be back with Victoria Houston. You stay with us. The peaceful, stunning north woods of Wisconsin are really breathtaking, and I think it's a rare treat when you find an entertaining and well-written novel that's set in that part of the state, and frankly, when it's your own state. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. Happy to be visiting today with author Victoria Houston. She never fails to fill her novels with great descriptions of the North Woods and the people who live there. And she has us on our toes here with her Loon Lake Fishing Mysteries. Gosh, I have so much trouble with that. Loon Lake Fishing Mysteries. That's how it's pronounced. The most recent installment, the title is Dead Rapunzel. And like the other 14 books before, it's a great read. Victoria, thanks again for spending time with us.
Well, and thank you for the compliment, Larry.
Oh, it's so much. Your books are so much fun. And really, it really is like, old friends, you know?
Oh, it's, good. Well, it certainly feels that way to me when I'm working on them. So I really enjoy it.
You know, I'm comparing you. I'm not really comparing you, but I'm contrasting. Let's put it that way. Patricia Skalkai was, when I talked to her, she said she wanted her characters. She's got like 6 books in mind with this series that she's working on, and she's aging her characters.
Oh,
and well, you don't do that.
No, I learned an important lesson. About 25 years ago, and I was still working in book and newspaper publishing, and I worked for a major newspaper syndicate called Universal Press, and we were syndicating, and I was working with cartoonists like Gary Trudeau with Doonesbury, Calvin and Hobbes, and For Better or For Worse, and another one, Kathy. Some of these will be familiar to your listeners. Although I have to say, I just recently gave a talk at the University of Minnesota School of Journalism.
Yep.
When I mentioned Dear Abby, of a room full of 150 kids, only 3 remembered Dear Abby. I think I'm aging. But anyway, in working with the cartoonists, they had to make a decision if they were going to age their characters. And I noticed that the strip For Better or For Worse, that cartoonist began to have difficulties after she'd been drawing that strip for 10, 12 years. Gary Trudeau with Doonesbury aged them for a short time, and then suddenly he stopped. And so I thought to myself, you know, I just am not going to age my characters. I'm not going to, for one thing, with Doc Osborne and his, you know, interest in Llewellyn Ferris, I just thought, let's not get into Viagra territory here. So I hope I don't offend anybody.
No.
But anyway, what I do, and keep in mind these are fictional stories, what I have in mind is that they are not aging, and yet I set the story about 2 years ago. At the time I'm writing it, it's 2 years ago. So this allows me to include cell phones, computers, the things that are part of our, you know, everyday life today, but weren't here 10 years ago. So it's an interesting balance. And And yet that's a decision writers have to make. On the other hand, I have to say some of the writers I've enjoyed, and I love the Martin Beck detective series by this Scandinavian couple, mm-hmm. Joal and Walu. And when you read that detective series, that character doesn't age. So, it's as much the difference between writers who are plot-driven and who are character-driven. And I'm a character-driven writer. When I start a book, I have a good idea who is murdered, but I don't really know much more than what I do in a one-page synopsis. So that story is going to change as I work on it, which I love. On the other hand, there are writers, friends of mine, who will have a 40, 50-page outline before they start.
Yeah, and Patricia, does the 40, 50-page outline sort of approach, but said she admired those who could do it the other way.
It's just what you're comfortable with, I think. If I had to do a plot outline, I would sort of take the juice out of the story, for me, personally. Because to tell you the truth, as I'm writing these stories, when there are twists and turns, those kind of have happened to me in the middle of writing the book. And, in fact, what I do when I'm midway through a book, I print it out in hard copy, and then I sit down and read through it, and then I say to myself, oh, my God, how did this happen? Then I usually go for a long drive because I do my best thinking when I'm driving. Oh.
So do you ever wake up in the middle of the night and say, oh, that's how I'm going to solve
it? Every once in a while I do, and that's why I keep a little notepad close at hand. And somebody said once, and I think this is true for me, they said sometimes your best thinking time is early in the morning when you've woken up but you haven't gotten up yet, and you're just lying there kind of thinking about your day. And that is very often when I'll get some good ideas.
Yeah, we should share the bones of this story a little bit and tell our listeners what this particular mystery is about.
Well, what happens is a woman who's the very young and new wife of an elderly man who's very wealthy, is suddenly, she's in the midst of planning to build a museum. She's very much a scholar of Georgia O'Keeffe painting. And she has inherited from her late husband, who died, enough millions that she can afford to showcase some of that art, which she feels, since O'Keeffe was from Wisconsin, would be important to people here. And just as she's getting started on that, she's crossing the street in the middle of winter and gets run down by a logging truck. And afterwards, as Doc Osborne and Chief Llewellyn Ferris are trying to figure out who would have been behind that, because they find out pretty quickly that it wasn't an accident. Then they have a number of people to look at, not the least of which are some very unhappy family members who were from her late husband's first marriage.
And several of them not the nicest people in the world.
No. But then, description of how to define a dysfunctional family. More than one person.
More than one person. I'm thinking about this. That's probably a good a way as any to put it. You've got some museum things. You've got some art going on there. You also have one character who is bipolar.
Yes. And so it's very interesting. One of the things I do enjoy about writing the mysteries is the research. Now, in terms of the art angle, I was the art critic for the Kansas City Star and for the national magazine Art News for a number of years back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of bipolar, That is such a frequent diagnosis for people today. So I looked into that pretty closely. But I will say, once again, that these stories come from memories from childhood. And I vividly remember a family that I knew. They were actually from Chicago, but very well-to-do. And I was friends as a, you know, middle school age person with their daughters, and one of them ended up just having a very difficult life because of being diagnosed bipolar. So I sort of started with that character and then did research, and that's how this developed. And one of the things that's very interesting is how how you can be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
And so that's used through the book. But I don't want to give away the mystery here.
So we
got to be careful, Larry.
Yeah, we got to be careful about it. And it really did kind of surprise me. And I thought, there was some of those aha moments that are always so much fun when you're reading a book.
Oh, good, good.
You want to say, now I'm starting to see the whole picture here. Oh, my goodness. Talking today with Victoria Houston. She is the author of the Loon Lake a Fishing Mystery Series. Her latest and 15th installment in the series is titled Dead Rapunzel. You may have already read some of her, or maybe all of them. I hope you'll join in with your own comments, questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you, and maybe you have some questions about writing. Maybe you're doing some writing, too, and want a tip or at least a suggestion. Again, the number 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. Now, when you for this particular book, for any of them, is there something? What is it that triggers it? Is it a newspaper story? Is it a?
It could be. I am I'm sort of a fanatic newspaper reader. So every day I start my day with a full pot of coffee, and I catch up with the New York Times online, but I also get it in print. It just comes later because it comes in the mail. Also the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, and then, of course, Rhinelander newspapers. And so sometimes some of the ideas I've had for the books have been sparked by newspaper stories. And, in fact, the book I'm starting now definitely comes out of a story that was in the New York Times. And that's sort of the jumping-off place. But I have to tell you, one of my books, I'm out to dinner, you know, catching a burger one night with two guys after an afternoon of fly fishing, and we're talking, and one of them is talking about, you know, having I forget if he worked for the Forest Service or the DNR. And he was doing his regular sort of checking of different logging roads and came on an overturned car. And in the car were three women, and they were alive. But they'd been so intoxicated, they were not aware that their car had flipped. And so that just his telling that story was like, interesting. Now, how do three – well, it turns out they were three ladies who were – employed at a gentleman's club, if you know what I mean. And so I just thought, well, that's a really provocative situation. Now, how did they get there? And, you know, so that was the spur for one of my books.
Oh. And
but it could be conversation. And there is one element in the current book, Dead Rapunzel. There are some paintings that surface that are very disturbing. And actually, many years ago, I was in a conversation with someone who had said that they had a family member who did this type of painting, and had knew that they had a terminal illness, and they arranged for, after they died, for these paintings to be displayed. And they were very upsetting to the family. And I have never forgotten that story. You know, so that just came out of conversation. So you never know.
You never know what's
when it's going to happen.
And I, you know, we talked about the three main characters that are always in Llewellyn and Doc Osborne and Ray Pratt. There are some others who come in from time to time, and there's a new one or two, or sort of a new one, who I'm kind of liking too these days, and that's the, I'm now suddenly blanking on her name, the young woman who is
her right-hand person.
Right-hand person.
Sure, who's on the computer all the time and who really wanted to go and be a hairdresser. And then it turns out she just had a knack for, you know, computer investigative work and doing searches and things. And so now she's become Lou's really right-hand person. And her name is Danny.
Yeah, and she's I think there's some real possibilities for featuring her even more in some future books.
Well, I think so, too. You know, she's good-hearted, she trusts people, and right there, you know, she's going to get into trouble.
And Doc Osborne's daughter, oh, my gosh.
Mallory.
Mallory, who now is a kind in the area.
Yeah, yeah. And he's had, you know, sort of a stressful relationship with that daughter. But they're, you know, they're repairing their relationship. And so that adds something to it. And
likely to be around a bit more.
Yes, yes. Although I'm not sure yet.
Not sure yet. You know,
I'll tell you one funny thing, Larry. I think I was about four or five books into the series, and I had an email from a reader who said, well, I really enjoyed this last book, but what happened to so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so from books 2, 3, and 4? And I responded, and I said, you know, if I were going to bring you an update on all those people, it would be an encyclopedia. So you never know who's going to surface and then who's going to be maybe on vacation for a while. And as a writer, I will say I personally am careful about two things. Number one is point of view. You will always get no more than maybe two major points of view plus randomly a third point of view early in the story. So you always know where the ideas and the thoughts and the observations are coming from. And I've totally forgotten what the second thing is.
Well,
oh my gosh.
Oh, that's all right. Your excuse for because I can tell you why, because I do the same thing.
Oh, isn't it terrible? Oh, golly.
Well, so you know, one of the things I thought about as I was reading this book, I thought, oh, I hope she's going to do some more. And you know, there probably comes a time, but in this case, I think you're probably going to keel over at the typewriter.
Like Ruth Rendell.
Yeah.
I know. That would not be a bad way to go.
I know.
Well, I'm working on the next book in the series. I'm under contract for that one. And I would very much hope to continue. I think that's a virtue, going back to your question about aging a character.
Yeah.
That is a virtue in the sense that you can maintain that environment and that universe. And I think there are other writers who do that. And I think another good example, many people are familiar with John Sanford. And,
I really enjoy his books.
Yeah. And, you know, again, you're stepping into a kind of a world that is set up by that writer. And I personally was asked several years ago if I'd ever write books set elsewhere. And I thought about it for a short time, and I said, no. You know, this is where I grew up. This is the landscape that I can write from the inside out, you know. And when I've attempted to write from other places, an early attempt at writing a mystery was set in Kansas City, where I lived for 15 years. But it doesn't have that same authenticity to it.
Yeah. Oh, you know, Barb and Lafarge called in and said you should have, for a future book title, how about Damselfly in Distress?
Oh.
There's no dead in
That's
it, though.
That's cute. Yeah, right.
And Jane emailed and wondered, are you an avid fly fisher, or at least love fly fishing?
I do. I wish I did more of it. You have to make your choices. You either write books or you fish. And so I try to get out as much as I can. I'm not an expert, but I did learn to fly fish with an expert in the field, Joan Wolf, and very famous icon, really, in the world of fly fishing. No one has ever cast a trout fly further than Joan Wolf. But anyway, when I was at her school, which was in the Catskills, I remember I was working so hard on my casting, and she looked at me and she said, with a shake of her head, as if it was impossible to get me to improve, she said, it's okay. You'll still catch fish. But yes, I love fishing from a boat, too, or from the dock. And I tend to personally enjoy fishing with a fly rod. But I went out a couple weeks ago with a friend with a spinning rod, and that was fun. Yeah. I like the other better, personally, because I'm using my whole body.
Yeah.
But, frankly, any excuse to be on water works.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the truth?
Oh, gosh, yes.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. And this, boy, I had several more questions, actually, I didn't get to. I'm so glad it was wintertime. Is your next one going to be, you do the seasons?
I try to, and it's a little tough to go fly fishing in the winter, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
But my book I'm working on right now is set in mid-July.
Okay, so back to summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it is, Victoria, it's always such a pleasure. Sometime we're going to have to get together and have a beer or something.
Sounds good to me.
and
please, Larry, let people know I've got signings coming up at Book World Stores and Mystery to Me in Madison.
When are you at Mystery? Well, tell you what, go to your site, right?
Yeah, everything's on the website. Yep.
And your website is, we have a link to it, but what is your website?
Pretty easy. VictoriaHouston.com.
VictoriaHouston.com. She's got a lot of signings, a lot of things coming up, and she may well be in your area. So go to her website, and I have a link on my Facebook page, on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Again, Victoria Houston, author of Dead Rapunzel. Stay with us.